So the reading today is from Esther 4, verses 1 to 17, and I have no idea what the page number is. So, when Mordecai learned of all that had been done, he tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, and went out into the city, wailing loudly and bitterly. But he went only as far as the king's gate, because no one clothed in sackcloth was allowed to enter it. In every province to which the edict and order of the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing. Many lay in sackcloth and ashes. When Esther's eunuchs and female attendants came and told her about Mordecai, she was in great distress. She sent clothes for him to put on instead of his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. Then Esther summoned Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs assigned to attend her, and ordered him to find out what was troubling Mordecai and why. So Hathach went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict for their annihilation, which has been published in Susa, to show to Esther and explain it to her. And he told him to instruct her to go into the king's presence to beg for mercy and plead with him for her people. Hathach went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. Then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, "All the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that they be put to death unless the king extends the gold scepter to them and spares their lives. But 30 days have passed since I was called to the king." When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer: "Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this?" Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai: "Go, gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. This is the word of the God.
Esther has always been one of my favorite stories in the Bible. Partly because it is one of two books in the Bible that is named after a woman, and that was quite exciting to me as a female growing up. And also because I grew up on Disney princesses. And Esther, on the surface, seems like she could fit this mold. She is beautiful. She is an orphan. Tick for Disney. She is also somebody who falls in happenstance with a king who ends up in love with her, and she is amazingly brave and she saves people. So on the surface, all the right stuff to make a good Disney musical. But when we look deeper into Esther, actually it's a very troubling story, a little bit like the Disney princesses. But that's for another day. Esther's story actually is a very troubling one, and it starts off troubling. And it's easier to understand if we put her into a more modern context. So Esther is an orphan, but she's also a migrant. And she has come here with a relative who may be her cousin or maybe her uncle. We're not quite sure about that. And they live together, and that's fine. But they are a migrant family, and they probably look different than the local people. They have different customs to the local people, so it was probably a little bit more difficult to assimilate. They also kept it quiet that she was Jewish as well, So it kind of tells you the political tension at that time. Jews were not welcome. They had a different language which they spoke. They had different food customs, and they worshipped a different god. Now you put all of this into the beginning of Esther's story, and suddenly you get a very, very different picture. Also, add on to it that the king that we're talking about is not our beautiful Disney prince, wonderfully handsome, kind, brave, honest kind of prince. This is the king of Persia. And there is some debate whether it is Xerxes, who was the king who lashed the sea when it destroyed his boats, so not necessarily the most sane person in the world, or whether it was Darius I, who also had his own troubles. There is some scholarly debate about which king it was, but we do know he was a very powerful king of Persia. And he has got rid of his queen, Vashti, because after a week of drinking, he has asked Vashti on many accounts to come before his friends in all her glory with her crown on to show her off. And Vashti has said no. Now, Vashti may have had other reasons as to why she didn't come. It may have been prideful. It may have been because she had a skin complaint. We don't actually know. But what we do know is that because of this disobedience, because she had the audacity to turn around and say no, the king has got rid of her and decided he wants a new queen, which means going and finding somebody young and beautiful and virginal who can fill the place. And she is going to take a year doing this beauty pageant to try and earn her place in the king's bed for more than a night. And if she doesn't please him, if Esther does not please him, then all she will do is join the rest of the concubines who didn't please him and live the rest of her life in the harem. It's not exactly a prize that you would necessarily want, but it is the prize that is the highest a woman can attain in Persia at the time. So that's just a little bit of backstory into Esther. So when we look further into when Mordecai comes, and this bit that we are given about Mordecai ripping off his clothes and putting on sackcloth, which is a really obvious statement of his grief, it is the time when he is aligning himself with the Jewish nation. And Esther's response is to try and hide it. She has been spending her whole life hiding her Jewishness. And so her response is, Mordecai, put some clothes on. What is it that is upsetting you that is so bad? And he says, look, this is bad. And if you think you can sit in your ivory tower and escape what is going to happen, then you are wrong. And perhaps actually, Esther, this is the whole reason that you have been working towards being in that ivory tower. Perhaps this is the time. Esther's response is a very, very human response. Her response is, I don't want to. I don't want to. I could die. And I don't know how many of you have been in a life and death situation. I have not. But our response as a human is self-preservation. I don't want to die, especially not for a group of people who I've been trying to disassociate with and who I perhaps don't know very well. I've spent at least a few years in the king's court trying to become as Persian as possible. I don't want to do this. Mordecai's response in saying, this is why you're here. This is the time. I think. He doesn't know for sure, But all of the pointers are there. All of the markers are saying, actually, there is nobody else who is in the position that you are. You have the ear of the king, the one person who can change the situation in this country. And you have his ear because you are in his bed. This is your time. What are you going to do about it? And so Esther does what she can. She doesn't rush into anything because it is a life and death situation and that takes some thinking about. She takes her time and says, okay, if we're going to do this, I need as much support as possible. So she didn't just go to her maids and her best friends in the court and say, oh, we're going to pray together. We're going to do this. She was like, no, I need everybody. I need everybody behind me on this. There is nothing like keeping you focused as knowing that everybody else is also focused on this as well. I don't know if you've ever tried to do something that you really, really want to do. I don't know how many of you have tried to train for a marathon or maybe something easier. Just go on a diet for a day. And when you go on a diet for a day, you start off the morning really well-intentioned and you go, yeah, today's going to be good. I'm going to have a no-carb day. It's going to be fine. And so you have your breakfast and everything's going well. And then you get to work and there are chocolates on the side. And perhaps somebody's brought in a birthday cake or a baptism cake and you're thinking, that cake looks really good. I could just have a little bit. Maybe just a little bit. But you've told somebody else and they're going, Abby, it's your first day. It's your first day of the diet. Come on, you can do this. And you're like, okay, I won't have the cake. And then it gets to later on in the day and you go home and your husband's made something really nice because he's a nice fella, but he's forgotten that you're on a diet. And then you're like, well, it's a loving thing. I can't really ignore that. And then you're like, oh, no. No, I've got somebody who's also backing me up on this and I'll let him know that I can't do it because I'm on a diet. And Fiona knows that I'm on a diet. My best friend knows I'm on a diet. And I have to tell her at the end of the day that I've stuck to it. And he accepts that. He understands that. So much easier when somebody's got your back. And that's something silly. That's something utterly ridiculous. Like me losing a couple of pounds. But actually, when somebody has got your back, when you know that you're not in this alone, it's so much easier to stay focused. And what we've been looking at over the last term or so is how are we strengthened? What tools does God give us to help us? And one of the things is community. It is. It's great. Prayer and fasting. Prayer, I think, as a community, we do more. Fasting, not so much. And I don't know whether this is just a British cultural thing, that fasting isn't one of the things that we really do in terms of trying to get in line with God. And this fasting I'm talking about is not the fasting to diet. This fasting is about being focused on God, letting nothing else distract us from that. And it's very different. I'm not talking about long fasts. I mean, we do have examples in the Bible of people who went on long fasts. Moses fasted for 40 days and 40 nights while he was receiving the word. But we also have examples of shorter fasts as well. And Jesus was a person who fasted regularly with his friends. Doing something together to focus all of you on what it is that you are asking of God. To keep going back to, right, God, this is everything that we're doing today. This is absolutely everything. I've got no distractions today. It's you and me, and it's us and you. And Lord, we are beseeching you in this. It's a really powerful tool that God gives us. Prayer is really powerful. But prayer is one of those things that we often get confused on. So I work with children a lot, and we talk a lot with them about prayer and about how prayer works. But recently I've had two of our children come up to me and say, Abby, God's not listening to me. Prayer doesn't work. And that's heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking. So I had to sit down and get to the crux of what they mean by God's not listening, because that is not biblical in any way, shape or form, and that is not the God that I know, and that is not the God that I'm sharing with them. So I know that that's not true. God is listening. So we had to get to the bottom of what it is that they were praying, that they felt that they were ignored. And partly, it's the timing aspect. As children, we find it really difficult to wait for an answer. And that's partly our society today. Everything is fairly instant. But when we pray to God, we go, God, this is a thing that I'm finding really difficult. Please help me in this way. And that's where we're falling down. We are reminded that we need to talk to God and ask for him in his timing and in his way. So it's, Lord, what would you have me do in this situation? This is a difficult situation. And whether it's, I don't like the school that I'm going to, I am being bullied, there is something that's terribly wrong. And if we take that into adulthood, I don't like the work situation I'm in, I'm being bullied, there is something that is going wrong. Lord, what would you have me do in this situation? And the answer might be moving school, moving job. The answer might be, okay, Lord, you have put me in this place for a reason. There is a culture here that is not good, and I am the only Christian in this situation. How can I bring you into it? How can I get people around me to know that you love them? Lord, in your timing, what is it that you would have me do? And that is really, really difficult when you're trying to do it alone. Having a community behind you who can pray with you in that situation, because I'm not saying it's not going to be hard. For most of us, it's not going to be a life and death situation. For some of us, we may find that in our jobs. Or in the things that we come across. I don't know what God has in future for you. But Esther, her prayer was that she would be willing to lay down her life if that was the cup that God has for her. She doesn't want that. She asks for it to be taken away. But if that is the situation that God is going to put her into, then a willingness to say, God, this is in your timing, and it will be answered in your way. And I've got everyone else, Lord, behind me who's also asking the same thing. Lord, what is it that we should be doing as a people? How should we be acting and supporting those who have the ear of the king? What is it that we can do? And sometimes we can't do anything but pray. One of the things that I really find interesting about Esther is the link that I find with Esther praying and Jesus in Gethsemane. They both pray that this cup gets taken away from them. But they mean it in such different ways. Esther's is coming from a place of fear. She doesn't know what's going to happen. Her life may be over. But she says, Lord, okay, we're going to do this, and I'm going to trust you. If that is the case, then so be it. But, Lord, I pray that it's not going to be. Whereas Jesus asks that the cup may be passed on. He is expecting his life to end. He knows it's going to be painful. But is this the right time? If it's not, then move on, Lord. But is this the right time? And if so, let it be. I wonder what our time is. I wonder, sometimes we think of our lives as coming to a pinnacle. It must be coming to one point. But I'm not sure that that's how God sees our lives. There may be various points. There may be various people that he puts in our lives. What is it at this moment, at this time, that he has put us in this place for? And how are we going to respond? Are we going to ask people to get alongside us and pray and say, look, there is something going on and I need your support? If it's really bad, are we going to ask them to fast with us? How many of you would feel comfortable about asking your friends to fast with you about a situation? I know, Christy, it's a bit different. I do love you. But this is just it. How do we respond? Do we take that courageous step and say, actually, Lord, this is a really difficult situation, and I am going to pray all day about it, and I am not just going to talk at you, but I'm going to try and listen to what you're saying, and I'm going to ask you, Lord, what would you have me do at this time? That's all I've got to say today. If you do have any prayer requests, then we are a praying community. So there will be prayer at the end of the session. We always have prayer so that you can pray with people. But if it's something that comes up as well during the week and you think, oh, I need a community behind me who's going to pray this through with me, then we have the prayer chain, which Sheila heads up and is wonderful at it. And that is a private system where Sheila manages it so that it goes out to the people who have offered to pray. But it just means that you've got a community behind you who are also praying through these things, who are bringing it before God, who are asking God, what is your answer here? So that we can then take the next steps, whatever they may be. And I would urge you to utilize that if you need it. Thank you.